Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington, and here are some of the stories we're covering today, Thursday, June 28, 2018. Opposition lawmakers in Juba are embracing the framework deal signed in Khartoum.
Though they have signed the agreement, yet there are still contentious issues between them on which they have not yet agreed. But the fact that they have agreed to work together is the most important thing.
But at least one analyst says the framework agreement on oil is aimed at propping up Sudan's ailing economy.
Since the two of us are dying anyway, and it is because of this common commodity, let us share our equity, defend it, and ensure, irrespective of the war, that we are able to get income to survive.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. South Sudanese lawmakers are welcoming the signing of a framework agreement by President Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar in Khartoum yesterday. A member of parliament representing an umbrella group of more than a dozen opposition political parties says the move shows that the two leaders have agreed to work together. Nabil Biagio reports for VOA from Juba.
Deng Bior Deng is from the Democratic Change Party, which is affiliated with the umbrella opposition group, the National Alliance. He says opposition political parties suggested earlier that if President Kiir and Riek Machar could not work together, they should both step down and allow a neutral government to be formed, which would organize national elections. South Sudan Information Minister Michael Makuei-Lueth told reporters in Addis Ababa last week that President Kiir was not ready to work with Machar. After the two leaders signed what's called the Khartoum Declaration of Agreement in Khartoum yesterday, Deng says it is important to recognize the willingness of the two leaders to work together.
It is now good they have signed the agreement, yet there are still contentious issues between them on which they have not yet agreed. But the fact that they have agreed to work together is the most important thing.
But Deng says he worries the relationship between President Kiir and Machar could break down again, just as it did in 2016 when fighting flared in Juba between Machar's bodyguards and government forces, which is spread across the country.
This is where the international community will be very much needed. The African Union, plus the UN, to now see into it that they secure and would be agreement which they are going to fight to sign finally, especially in regards to question of security, the question how to manage the security of Juba after the peace is very important, and the implementation process should be actually observed by the international community.
Philip Alet Gadien represents the Sudan African National Union Party in South Sudan's National Assembly. Gadien says both South Sudan and Sudan will benefit if peace is restored. He says Sudan President Omar al-Bashir will benefit from the oil and cross-border trade with South Sudan and will also be able to secure Sudan's southern border from the SPLA North rebels. But Gadien says Kiir, Bashir, and Machar must all be committed to the agreements they sign in order for there be lasting peace in South Sudan.
They know that there is no development. People are dying from hunger, disease, and from the bullet. And there is no production because of the war, no development, and so on.
The Kiir-Machar meeting in Addis Ababa yielded no results on the outstanding issues. A communique issued by regional bloc IGAD following that meeting called for President Bashir to facilitate a second round of direct talks between Kiir and Machar to build on what was discussed in Addis. After 3 days of direct talks in Khartoum this week, the two signed the framework agreement. Paulino Ioane Bonjou, a member of parliament from the ruling SPLM party, says he is confident that total peace will return to South Sudan soon.
The leaders of IGAD has referred the issue to Sudan being the closest country that South Sudan has been part of a number of years ago, that Sudan should look and try to narrow the gap between the leaders of the Republic of South Sudan. So we believe that the effort that they are doing will not go for vain. We believe that peace is just at the corner.
In a separate session, delegates from Sudan and South Sudan will discuss economic cooperation between the two countries. The IGAD communique says the delegates will also talk about measures to be taken to rehabilitate the South Sudanese economy through bilateral cooperation between South Sudan and Sudan. Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta is expected to host yet another round of talks in Nairobi between the two leaders in the weeks ahead. Mr. Makwei told reporters in Juba last week that if the parties reach a final agreement at that point, they will return to Addis to sign a final peace deal. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biadro in Juba.
But a South Sudanese activist doesn't see it that way. He's blaming President Kiir and rebel leader Machar for signing a deal that gives Sudan and Uganda an opportunity to tap into the resources of South Sudan. Remember, Mia Minji says the two leaders did not consult other South Sudanese opposition leaders on the Khartoum Agreement. He says the deal is crafted in a way that helps Sudan get over its serious economic crisis.
The economies of these two countries are intertwined with the income from the oil. So Sudan's solution is bring the oil back, because the oil will then sustain that economy. Of course, how can an economy in as bad shape as that of Sudan be mandated with the ability to rehabilitate another economy that is as worse as itself? The rationale simply is, since the two of us are dying anyway, and it is because of this common commodity, let us share our equity, defend it, and ensure, irrespective of the war, that we are able to get income to survive. Oil is at the nerve center of the economy of Sudan, and is at the nerve center of the theory of war in South Sudan. And the two parties want to make sure the pipes are not closed.
There is a section in that agreement which says troops from African Union or the neighboring countries will be the guarantor of the ceasefire agreement that will take effect in 72 hours. Given the past history of the warring parties in South Sudan, where they never respect any ceasefire agreement, what is the implication of bringing in forces from the African countries to be the guarantor of this ceasefire?
In fact, there are a number of problems with that provision. First of all, if you look at the way the provision is couched, the provision does not ask the AU, it does not ask IGAD. It is actually kindly inviting member states of IGAD and the AU to enter South Sudan under the pretext. Why I say a pretext is because this is exactly a backdoor for Uganda to go back into South Sudan and defend its interest, because it's a member of IGAD, it's a member of the AU. It is also a backdoor for Sudan to go back into South Sudan, because it is a member within IGAD, is a member of the AU. So the fact that it is not asking the collective, which is the AU or IGAD, but its members and kindly inviting them, first of all, to observe a ceasefire that has been declared, but declared on the basis of two contradictory documents. First of all, it is based on the cessation of hostility agreement that is not holding at the moment, which is almost gone.
This mediation by President Omar Hassan al-Bashir was mandated by the IGAD Council of Ministers. Why do you call it a sellout?
It is not only REAC that is there. It is not only Salva that is there. The Alliance of Political Parties is there. The former detainees are there. We are aware that Khartoum has invited the civil society and the religious leader to Khartoum. That is already looking as if it is outside the mandate given by IGAD Council of Ministers. What is happening in Khartoum, in fact, is a usurpation of the failed revitalization process under a different name and outside completely the remit provided for by the Council of Ministers. They did not provide for a new process. They did not provide for new parties. They provided for the principals to continue the conversation they had in Addis.
The Khartoum Agreement Declaration was signed yesterday as a result of face-to-face discussion between President Salva Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar. Why are you not happy with this document?
There was no, at no point in time of the revitalization process was oil an issue for discussion. The mandate that was given for revitalization by the head of states of IGAD did not include the discussion of the oil sector as an item. The issue on which there has been an agreement to continue to discuss are the very same issues on which the parties disagree in Addis.
That's, remember, Mia Mingi, a South Sudanese activist with the group South Sudan Human Rights Observatory, speaking with my colleague John Tanza from Addis Ababa yesterday. Some women in South Sudan say they have quit their jobs or have even shut down their small businesses altogether because of repeated sexual harassment by male bosses and customers. A women's rights activist says sexual harassment is commonplace in South Sudan, and sexual harassment is jeopardizing women's participation in the economic development of the country. Manyang David Mayar has this story for VOA from Juba.
20-year-old Monica Chol sits on a mat in the evening shade of her house, mending a blue bedsheet. A month ago, she says she was busy running her small business, which was blending and selling juice along a well-traveled street in Juba. Speaking in Arabic, Chol says business was booming, but she eventually decided to shut down her juice stand because of all the sexual harassment she experienced with male customers.
My business was going well, but after a while, people used to come and ask me for my mobile number. Some take my phone number and call me at night and tell me nonsense. They come to my place and want to sit with me and not to do my work. There are people who just come from nowhere and they come without respect. They just come here and start touching me anyhow. That pains me so much, and I decided to shut down my business.
Before she decided to give up her business, Ashol says she was earning about 3,000 South Sudanese pounds a day. She used the money to care for her family of three, including buying clothes and medication for her three-year-old daughter. Ashol says life now is hard, but she does not regret her decision.
I came to work at the roadside because of condition and not to look for men. I came to look for money because my husband has no job and my child needs soap and many things.
Other women looking for work in Juba say they are often harassed by their employers. 24-year-old Mary Tabu completed Senior 4 2 years ago. She says after looking for an office job for several months and not finding anything, she took a job as a salesperson at a private clothing company here in Juba. Tabu says her male boss tried to use his position to get her to sleep with him.
I worked with him from the start very good, but reaching at some point, my boss started saying he wanted me, something of that kind. Then I had to tell him, I'm sorry, my aim here is for work. He started getting angry without any reason. He quarrels, he gets annoyed.
Tabu says from that point, her boss made her life very difficult.
On Sundays, I don't used to work, so he insisted that every Sunday I had to come for work.
Tabu says that was her second experience losing a job because a boss wanted to have sex with her. Before she was fired, Tabu says she was earning 7,000 SSP a month. But she says it was difficult to save any money on that kind of salary. But now life is even harder without a steady job. Women rights activist Susan Williams says sexual harassment is a common practice among many South Sudanese men.
It is actually outrageous and it is alarming. There are women who are harassed at workplace or at their business places. Some women will be like, no, they will continue living in harassment because they want to explore or maybe they want to gain. But then there are some women also who will not speak up, but they will quit their job or they will stop their businesses. So it is actually diminishing the development, the economic development of so many women.
Legally, William says any form of sexual harassment is a crime and punishable by law. For VOA News, I'm Manyang David Mayar in Juba.
In neighboring Uganda, Macquarie University is planning to install CCTV cameras in strategic places around campus as part of an effort to curb sexual harassment. The idea is supported by a committee created by Macquarie University to investigate reports of harassment. Several reports of harassment have been treated as allegations, widely discussed on corridors of the university, and reported in the media. It has been hard, though, for both the victims to gather evidence against the perpetrators, but the committee is optimistic that the cameras will help solve the problem. VOA's Catherine Nambi has more from Kampala.
For quite some time, Uganda's oldest public university, Makerere, has been in the media spotlight for cases of sexual harassment and assault. Several reports have been filed against lecturers. Several have been accused of luring girls to private meetings in often closed rooms to discuss their allegedly low marks. They offer the girls better grades in exchange for sex. But because of a lack of evidence, no lecturer has been punished. Sometimes the university finds that the physical relationship between the student and the teacher was consensual. This has frustrated students, especially the females who sometimes prefer to keep silent about the problem. Lizel Muwaya is a second-year journalism and communication student at Makerere University. She says there are several students who have not reported sexual harassment cases because they are poorly handled by the university authorities.
Sexual harassment has really tarnished the image of Makerere as a university. The image of we the girls in this university, because people think we all go through it. But then again, also the lecturers that are doing this that have been reported, why are they not being acted upon? They are tarnishing the images of the other lecturers. I believe that we still have good lecturers in this university because I have seen them, much as we also have those predators, but it is up to the university authorities to make sure they are dealing with these cases, but they have decided to ignore them.
In the wake of the reports, the university management instituted a 5-member committee to investigate sexual harassment. After about 4 months of probing, the committee presented its findings this week. It determined that indeed there is a conducive environment on campus that makes it easier for men to approach, pressure and intimidate women. Associate Professor Christopher Mbazira is a member of the committee.
99% of the victims are female. So we discovered that there is also lack of empowerment on the part of students. They need to be empowered in terms of them understanding their worth as human beings, them understanding their dignity as part of the human race, and for them to be able to, you know, uphold that worth and not trade it for something that may affect their dignity.
The committee has recommended a number of reforms. They include installation of CCTV cameras in strategic places to monitor meetings between lecturers and students, and a review of university record-keeping systems to verify marks. The committee has given the University Council up to 31st May 2019 to ensure that cameras are installed on key buildings and within corridors, and that adequate lighting is provided throughout the campus. Professor Barnabas Nawangwe is the university vice chancellor.
CCTV cameras are good, and we have a program of installing them. It is an expensive venture, but it is something we intend to do. But I don't think that CCTV cameras by themselves will stop this vice. I think the most important thing is to have a zero tolerance policy and to enforce it. But we will still go ahead with our program of CCTV cameras.
The students have welcomed the move. Fiona Kokoi is a student's representative at the university. She is optimistic the cameras will help end impunity by filming any physical harassment by the lecturer against young women.
I happened to move into so many offices of the lecturers and I didn't see any cameras there. So probably if the university can make sure that we have cameras in each and every office of the lecturers, that will provide some evidence.
Florence Nakazi is also a student at the university. She wants the cameras to be placed in every room where students and lecturers discuss marks.
So let's say like every college has a marking center so that all the lecturers that mark the papers are there and they stay there. Like the camera should be in those centers so that when students come to complain, they are shown their marks from the marking centers.
Makerere University has anti-sexual harassment policy that prescribes tough punishments for the perpetrators. They include suspension, demotion, a written warning or public apology, or compensation to the aggrieved student. However, much as the policy has been in place for a long time, some argue that it has not been implemented and used to deter or apprehend the perpetrators of the vice. This is Catherine Nambi For VOA News in Kampala.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, activists around the world are celebrating a court case in Sudan involving a woman. Find out more when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
would it matter to you if your presidential candidate were a woman?
No, it wouldn't at all. I think man-woman, for me, it's about someone who gets the job done and someone who understands that leadership is about service and not using power for selfish reasons.
It does not matter. As long as she's productive, that's it.
I would be very happy if my presidential candidate was a woman, because I see that women are equal to men. We are there to support. And a lot of things that women have done, I think men have perceived to do it, but women do it better.
For me, it does not matter whether it is a man or a woman. Leadership is not by sex. Rather, ability.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Activists with the Justice for Nora campaign celebrated yesterday when they learned the woman's death penalty had been lifted. Nora Hussein is the 19-year-old Sudanese woman who was sentenced to death in May for fatally stabbing her husband, whom Hussein had accused of raping her repeatedly. Hussein now faces a sentence of 5 years in prison. Wafa May Alamin, a humanitarian activist and one of the Washington-based organizers of the Justice for Nora campaign, says although there is cause for celebration, today the hard work is not done yet.
It was a huge sigh of relief because I know myself, I had countless nights where I wasn't sleeping for days on end, and not only just myself, but my team collectively, the global world. A lot of people lost sleep over this and worked really, really hard and put in a lot of work. So it was really nice to know that the overwhelming support from the Sudanese people and the Sudanese diaspora and the global community and those who sent in letters of support, it was just really nice to see that people can have an impact. And even though it all just started from a hashtag and that's how we got involved, that, you know, the goodness of humanity does prevail and that people will listen.
And this was a global effort, as you just said. Could you talk about the work that has gone into the legal and social media platform?
Initially, my team and I, we heard about it maybe early May, a few days before that Nora was going to be initially sentenced, or they were going to find whatever her sentencing was. And since then, it just started from a very small collective effort of people just spreading the word, raising awareness within our immediate circles, our immediate networks. It was a lot of just outreaching and pitching the story to news platforms and media platforms who could help us spread the word, reaching out to, you know, humanitarian organizations, human rights organizations. It was painstaking effort initially to draft all of these memorandums and these legal documents to share, and it was a lot of countless hours speaking directly to Nora's defense team because, you know, we were their direct contact to help them spread the word.
What comes next?
So after this, you know, the team is currently working on creating an action plan on what to do forward. We just want to ensure that, you know, the most important thing is to, you know, our priority is to ensure that Nora has the legal, medical, financial, and emotional support she needs during this time and during the next couple of years. And we're going to continue to work diligently as a global community to raise awareness. You know, this is something that's not only isolated to Nora. You know, our main focus, of course, is ensuring Nora's well-being, but we want to be sure to provide the avenues. You know, Sudan is in a very crucial time. I think the world itself is in a very crucial time. So Nora is a start, and hopefully we can just continue on this forward momentum and ensure that her well-being, like ensure that she's doing well and she's healthy and that we can provide her all the support that she needs.
That is Wafa May Alamin, a humanitarian activist and one of the Washington-based organizers of the Justice for Nora campaign. She was speaking to my colleague Ayan Dang-Bior from Richmond, Virginia yesterday. In results at the World Cup action in Russia today, Colombia and Japan advanced to the knockout stage. Colombia just defeated Senegal this past hour 1-0. That unfortunately leaves no African team in the knockout round. Defending World Cup champion Germany crashed out of the tournament yesterday after a 2-0 loss to South Korea in Kazan, Russia. The Germans went out of the World Cup in the first round for the first time in 80 years. Joining us now with some reaction as well as other World Cup news is VOA's Gwen Uten.
Germany is out. Thousands of fans were distraught as they watched their defending champions suffer a stunning 2-0 defeat at the hands of a relentless South Korean team. Many Germans left the stadium in tears, but there were those among them who said Germany played poorly from the very beginning. This German fan says his team deserved to crash out. He says the preparation was really bad, and he hopes the team has learned their lesson and will prepare better next time. He says, quote, "They deserve to be out, and I say this as a German fan." Germany has won the World Cup 4 times and finished as runners-up 4 times, and were one of the teams favored to win this year. However, Germany has crashed in last place in Group F. South Korea is also out of the tournament in spite of their 2-0 win against Germany, finishing in third.
Mexico! Mexico! Mexico!
Well, despite their 3-0 loss against Sweden, Mexican fans celebrated as their team advanced to the round of 16, thanks to Germany's loss. After the match, coach Juan Carlos Orcio told reporters, Sweden's strong defense taught him a lot as they prepare for the next round. Mexico will next face Brazil on Monday. Sweden finishes at the top of Group F and are set to play Switzerland next Tuesday. Switzerland reached the round of 16 in a thrilling 2-2 draw against Costa Rica on Wednesday. Costa Rica were already eliminated, but after Wednesday's match, they can leave the tournament with 2 goals after previously scoring none. Switzerland needed at least a draw to advance to the next round, and they finished 2nd in Group E. But the top of that group belongs to Brazil. Brazilian fans brought the party with them to the fan zone and celebrated their 2-0 victory over Serbia.
You know, I have the big proof in my life. I was with Serbian people chasing for Brazil because my husband's Serbian. My 2 daughters are from Serbia, but you got it. I am so happy. Let's see what's going to happen.
It's getting better. Day by day is getting better.
Yeah.
No worries.
Ciao. You deserve it. You deserve it. Great game.
We are going to make it.
So it's on to the next round for the 5 times world champions. They have remained unbeaten in this tournament so far, and we'll see if that holds when they face Mexico on Monday. For South Sudan in Focus, I'm Gwen Uten in Washington.
Thanks, Gwen, and that's our show for this Thursday. We now leave you with the song Handkerchief with Nana Ya featuring Samini.
Oh, da baby, na me da baby, oh, be a by you. Me say sabri, oh, da wa honka, me da nim pasu, oh. Me try shemi hu, shemi hu, shemi hu, ah. Come on, Jay, oh, Jay, oh, Jay. Me say wuna wuda da un chay, wampe monka wube te ya. Come on, come on, baby, ah. Into your nihoy, ava me chini siowa. Into your money me handkerchief, na mi suwa mi di apipa. Oda money me handkerchief, na mi suwa mi di apipa. Money me handkerchief, na mi suwa mi di apipa. Give it to my Jimmy, na mi suwa mi di apipa. Me love you.
We've been listening to Nana Ya featuring Samini with the song Handkerchief. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. Let us know if you like the show. You can find us on the web at South Sudan in Focus, or at South Sudan at voanews.com, or you can look us up on Facebook, and our title is South Sudan in Focus. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
don kase sumu na tumu beba watu ni diemba en sumu na tumu e oba peni e onfanika wanted.